Welcome to the Deuce Podcast. I'm Brad.
And I'm Jeremy.
And Jeremy, it's episode 76 of the Deuce Podcast.
76 Deuce Podcasts in the bag.
So you have 76 episodes that you can, well, 75, including 76, including this one.
Yes, 76, including this one.
We are in the middle of our Witchapalooza.
The Witchapalooza.
We called it the Witchapalooza. We recently did, what movie did we do?
This last time around?
Yes, the Blair Witch.
Blair Witch. A Book of Shadows, Blair Witch.
Blair Witch 2. And we are doing the movie Inferno.
Yes.
Which, when we started watching this movie, I was like, Tom Hanks isn't in this movie at all.
Oh, that was the wrong Inferno.
Oh, crap. What did we watch?
We watched the Dario Argento Inferno.
But we can watch. I think Inferno's the second Da Vinci, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
So we can do that, yeah.
We could.
Down the road?
Yeah, we could. I suppose technically we could, yes. Yeah.
Okay, whatever.
No, but
someone's not a Paul Bentley fan, I take it.
Correct. This is the second in the Three Mothers series. So it was a trilogy of movies that was conceived by Dario Argento and had all, you know, depending upon, you know, whose stories go with what, like, how much others contributed to that, but it's Dario Argento's baby. He had Suspiria, which is a classic horror movie.
You do know him, it's probably that movie.
I would agree. And there's some others. There's like Deep Red.
Deep Red.
And other movies like that you might know. Tenebrae is another one.
Okay.
This one...
If you do not know him, he is a... Italian film director.
Yep, Italian horror filmmaker. So he comes from this, you talk about in, like, U.S. movies, all the people who've influenced one another or work with each other. The same really holds true in, like, Italian film as well. He's got this pedigree. His mentor was a director named Mario Bava. Who directed a lot of Italian horror movies, very beautifully shot horror movies. One in particular that I was introduced to was, there was a movie called The Whip in the Body, which had Christopher Lee in it when he was a lot younger. It was like a vampire movie.
Okay. So,
but it was wonderful movie.
One of the Bava movies I know is Inferno.
Yes. we'll talk about that too, but he actually stepped up and helped out a lot in this one as well.
Correct. So,
but then even Bava, like, his son is Lamberto Bava, who did a lot of cinematography and directed. You have Dario Argento. His wife is Daria Nicolodi, who has been in tons of movies. Their daughter is Asia Argento, who has been in a lot of movies and unfortunately had gotten into some trouble just recently. She was part of the Me Too movement and then had somebody come out and speak out about her. So, but you know, was a child actor and has been through a lot herself.
And
so.
Also, isn't Argento a cheese?
That's Sargento.
Oh, Sargento.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's his military brother, Sargento. Dario Sargento.
Dario Sargento's.
It's the horror cheese.
It's the cheesy horror movies.
But yeah, no, this is... So the first movie came out in 77, Suspiria did. And then...
I saw at Schmalamo. Yeah. Draft House.
The Mark,
I don't
Schmalamo.
Know if we can say Alamo, so I'm saying Schmalamo. I don't want to be sued by them.
Yeah. Yeah, let's not be sued. So let's call it Marshmallow.
Marshmallow Draft House.
Yes. And so we saw a print of it there.
It was terrible. Not a great cut.
It was not a great cut. And I think, and so a lot of these movies I was introduced to by Court from the Cinema PsyOps podcast. Who is definitely a friend of the show.
Can I say that's the first, like, D'Argento movie that I've seen.
Argento.
Right? Argento, sorry. I'm thinking of Sargento.
That one's stuck in your head.
Um, Well, and I haven't seen any since. Like, this is the second one. So, like, that's all it can go by. But watching it, I was, and I was like, I don't want to watch this. But then when we went to go see it, I was like, wow, this is so interesting. And, like, you can see influences, and you can see influences that he had and people he influenced as well.
Yep. And he is very, he does a lot with these vibrant colors and lighting and you know, like, it's, his stuff is very influential, and you can see that through horror. You can see that, you know, in other directors, like, and we'll touch on like a particular scene later, but like we talked about Wes Anderson, you see some, we thought you see some influences from him in Wes Anderson's work even.
I know that sounds weird because it's a horror movie, but like you really kind of do. There's moments where it's almost symmetrical.
Yeah.
The way
it's about symmetry, overhead shots, all these things that are that he, you know, he and Bava both tried. So but yeah, so this is the second of them. So this one came out and originally was made in 1980. But Fox kind of screwed them over. They had some management changes. And when they did that, this got shelved for a number of years. What was it, 85 then?
Like 85?
85, it like had some limited theatrical releases, but not very many. And then it was like 87 before it came out on VHS. I mean, like, so this thing just got kind of kneecapped by the studios, by the distribution. So there's a lot of people who said, hey, if you haven't seen this outside of, you know, if you were outside of Italy, you probably really didn't see this movie. But, you know, thankfully, there are lots of great places that put out, you know, good cuts of it, too. And Court has impressed upon me and would be the first one to tell you, make sure you get good cuts of these movies, whether it's this, whether it's the a good cut of Suspiria.
Well, like, that was a bad cut we saw.
It was a bad cut. Well, and
because all of a sudden I was like, wait, what's going on?
Yeah, they cut big chunks of it out, and the colors were off. Like, it was really tinted pink.
Especially with a movie like this, you kind of have to have the colors.
Yeah.
Because that's the whole point of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, you need to be able to see it. So, yeah. But yeah, so, and the third part of the trilogy, Mother of Tears, did not come out until 2007, I believe it was.
Okay.
And I watched it with Court because we were both very excited that the last part finally was coming out, you know, 20 plus years later, 27 years later. So, check them out. You know, Argento is a great filmmaker, so definitely check them out.
And speaking of checking stuff out, mm-hmm. We are part of the No Phony Podcast Network. I suggest going on to their website and checking out their podcasts as well, which includes us. Where can people find that, Jeremy?
That's nophonynetwork.com.
Correct. Or you can go on to Twitter.
Yep.
Facebook. Do whatever. Mm-hmm. You can just scream and go, hey,
no phony.
I'm not a phony.
If you scream that, then a bat flies up to you.
It is true.
With a web address for you to log
in. It is true. But
that will say nophonynetwork.com, so just go there anyway.
You know what? I think it's time to take a break, Jeremy. Yeah. So after these messages, we'll be right back.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Did you ever see a film at such a young age it left you traumatized with cinematic wounds?
Necrophilia.
It's a dead issue, man. Don't push it. Cinema Psyops is a weekly podcast documenting an ongoing experiment on the mind of an unwilling test subject.
No one should have to watch this movie.
Oh, no one should have to watch this.
No one should have to watch this movie.
Surprisingly, it's not a topic that a lot of people really want to tackle.
I'm shocked, prudes.
I know, really.
Right?
It's the next sexual frontier that no one wants to explore.
I am, in the most sincerest of senses, disappointed in it.
It takes a powerful goddess like Connie, jam her arm down the monster's throat and kill it. I'm still tripping out over that. Even as a kid, I was like, I gotta find a girl like that. Every week, I get a new look of disappointment that I never thought I could get out of
it. It's unimaginable. At 12 years old, you should not be watching this movie.
Obviously.
At 13, you should not be. 14, you shouldn't be. I'm not entirely sure even 17-year-olds should be watching this.
Just because you're offended by something doesn't mean that you have the right to demand that it doesn't exist.
Watching this film again, I had all of this, like, little nerd glee with everything that kept popping up.
Little history doll popping up at you.
So I totally loved this film.
Hey, I know why you know, couldn't see that. It's because your brain's warped from watching this shit at 12 years old.
Yeah, this is a rough movie. I told you ahead of time when we were getting ready to do it that it was going to be a rough
movie.
How
did you watch this shit at 12?
Because physical wounds heal, cinematic ones don't. Listen to Cinema Psyops.
And we're back.
We are back.
So check those people out.
Mm-hmm.
Support. Do it.
Do it.
Be a bra and support.
We definitely learned a lot, so
yeah.
It's time to give back.
It is time to give back.
Send people their way.
Send people their way.
True, they do not need
True, they do not need
our
need
help,
that.
But we'll send our listeners
I'm
their
just
way.
Copying everything you say.
Okay.
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 I think, what else do we need to say about this movie besides, do we want to say about how he was kind of on his back?
Yeah, well, so this is, Argento has said that this is his least favorite of his movies, not because of how it was done or, like, whatever. It was, the reasons are, so he had come down with hepatitis during this movie, or like at the beginning of it, and so he was taking treatments, but he was in pain a lot of the time. So at the beginning, he was having to call people in to help him with a lot of stuff. So like Lamberto Bava was like an assistant director or like a cinematographer with it, or he was helping out with it. And the second team production, his mentor Mario Bava actually came in and helped with a lot of that. And really, when it came to the first production team, when he's got the actual actors there and is telling him what to do, Argento was like, a lot of times he was on his back directing,
right?
Because it hurt him to be sitting
so
up.
They
so
said
much.
That who directed a lot of the movie?
So there was a lot of scenes where. A great deal of scenes where Mario Bava actually stepped in. So it's actually interesting, and we're kind of guessing as the movie was going, because you would see where almost stylistically it would flip back and forth between different
kind
like,
of
it, like the, you, they were pretty no they weren't that far off
no they
but
weren't
you
that
could
far
see
off.
You could see a little bit of like, oh, okay, like somebody made this decision versus this, or you could see a little style in there.
Yeah,
where you could maybe tell them apart a little bit. But he was Argento was in such excruciating pain during all this, and he was absent for good portions of it because he just was ill, that he has such negative like a memory or emotions tied to this that's like his least favorite because of that reason.
Also, the role of Mark, the brother, was originally supposed to be James Woods. Jimmy Woods.
Yuck.
Yeah, so that's terrible.
That it would have been awful.
Well, you know, it's James Woods. Instead, it went to, I call him Jimmy Forrest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lee McCloskey.
Yes.
Is his name. And he's been in a bunch of things, but he's, I think, most, he was a soap opera actor.
Oh, yeah.
He was in a lot of episodes of Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara?
Yeah.
Okay.
And some other things, too.
Why don't we drop the deuce on this?
Let's do it.
Okay.
All right. So the movie opens.
And boy, does it open.
But no, like, and I talked to, I got some words of encouragement from Court Psyops before I started this. Because originally, I was thinking, hey, we should get Court on. He's always a fount of knowledge for these kind of things. Like he will tell you so much, and he actually taught me a lot about it. So what perfect timing to get him in here to talk about it. Unfortunately, he was feeling a little bit under the weather, and so
Oh no! Does he have hepatitis too?
Oh gosh, no, oh, probably okay. not. We do not need that rumor swirling around. No, so he I talked to him, was like, oh man, I hope I can do this. And he's like, I've told you enough about Italian cinema that you're going to be fine. So we will see. Maybe if I botch this up, we'll have a retraction episode where Corbin just correct me.
We're fine. Me and you, we're fine.
We're fine. So Italy.
I've eaten spaghetti before.
Italy is a country in South America.
It's shaped like a boot. The end.
It's shaped like a loafer.
We know. And, we can do this. Screw that. Come on.
So he said, I hope you have a great print because you want to make sure, like, the cinematography is what does it for this.
Yeah.
Which I agree. Like, it's the cinematography is the great point. It's good visually. So it opens on, you see this kind of, this woman's hand on this book, and it's beautifully shot, like a very good detail on it. And it's the book titled The Three Mothers.
Yes.
And so this, yeah. She opens this
book. I got
book.
That during the Scholastic book drive at school.
Yes. That's when they...
I circled Goosebumps and the Three Mothers.
I'll take Goosebumps, Amelia Bedelia, and The Three Mothers by Penguin Books.
By Penguin Books.
Then
you had to wait like 7 weeks later to get the books.
I don't remember. I think I remember just getting the stuff that was at the book fair.
Oh, really?
I don't remember, like,
that only happened, like, once a year, though.
Maybe.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get back to this.
We open. So the woman is reading the book. It's opened, or the book is written by this this alchemist named Varelli, who tells this story about three evil sisters who rule the world. So it's three sisters. There's the mother of sorrow, the mother of tears, and the mother of darkness.
Oh, they weren't the mothers. Okay, yeah.
So of course that's it's the mother of Mater. Mater Suspiriorum is the mother of sighs. Mater Lacrimarum is the mother of tears, which is the name of the third movie. And then Mater Tenebrarum, which is the mother of shadows or mother of darkness, which is the mother, which is the witch from this movie.
Which I totally get that, because there's a lot of scenes in this movie where we're relying on shadows a lot. There's a lot of like dim lit people where you can only see like their face, like nose, or like, you know, nose down.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to like Suspiria, where it's like it was shot where the size was kind of like all off. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
At least when I watched it, right? Am I making all that up?
The mother of sighs, she's one about sorrow, but if you like think about it, it's these young ladies who are like all alone and kind of isolated and things in the first movie, but she's supposed to be like the wisest and oldest of the sisters in the first movie. That's why kind of also has this like the school that's well established and all this other stuff. The alchemist Varelli, he says that Mater Tenebrarum is the like cruelest one. The mother of shadows is the cruelest.
Oh,
one
gosh,
of them. She's
yes.
the youngest and cruelest.
Yes.
Now the three mothers, they have each have their own house. Like, this architect was to make all these homes for them where they would live and have their power.
Right.
That
guy's name is Bob Vila.
Bob Vila.
Am I correct?
This evil home.
This evil old house. This week on this evil old house.
So the mother size from Suspiria lives in Freiburg, Germany. They said the mother of tears, Mater Lacrimarum, lives in Rome, and then
at your Thanksgiving table,
Yes.
Depending on, you know, what you tell your mother that holiday.
Yeah.
She might cry.
Yes.
Anyway, go ahead.
And then Mater Tenebrarum lives in New York.
New York.
And so Rose Elliott.
Why wouldn't she live in New York? I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah. Right. Rose Elliott is a poet who's living in New York. And yes. It's the woman.
No relation to T.S.
No.
Found that out.
No.
Or Chris. Didn't. Or Chris Elliott.
Correct. Or Abby Elliott.
Like, yeah.
So she's played by Irene Miracle. I hope I am pronouncing that correctly. Unless it's got some sort of Italian pronunciation.
A miracle.
Miracle. I'm pretty sure it's Irene Miracle. But Rose is living in New York, and she has suspected that something's wrong, and she basically becomes obsessed with the three mothers. And she's gotten this book and has convinced herself that she's living in the Mother of Shadows' home. And so...
Which is like this hotel, kind of like...
Yeah, it's like a... looks like it was a hotel or like a kind of a...
Yeah.
You know...
an apartment hotel kind of place.
Yeah. It almost has this kind of like Art Deco a little bit style
Very
to it.
Very much so.
Yeah. Rose writes her brother Mark with her concerns. Of course, Mark, played by Lee McCloskey, who's actually in Rome. And
when you're in Rome, do what the Romans do. Yes. Grow a creepy mustache.
And not Rome, Wisconsin.
No.
In Rome, Italy.
Rome, Italy.
Yep. So she's urging... She asks Mark to come back come to New York to check this out with her.
Do you know what Mark reminds me of? You know, like Simon and Simon?
Yeah.
You know the guy that played the mustache-less Simon?
Yeah.
He looks like that if he grew a mustache.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I get that.
It looks like if he borrowed Gerald McGraney's mustache for a day.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, I would agree.
Go ahead.
After she writes her brother, she's going through the book and it gives her like three keys. Like she says, it says that part of their power is like in the cellar. Part of the power is like beneath the soles of your feet. And it like basically is giving her like keys on how to stop them.
Oh, okay.
And so... She goes to the bookstore owner where she got the book. A guy named Kazanian's Antiques, and she's talking to him, and he's just like
Crazy Kazanian. Yeah. Come down to Crazy Kazanian.
Zany Kazanian.
Zany Kazanian.
But he just goes, "Oh yeah, women are stupid. Yeah. Women fall for this crap." And so he's very dismissive of her and says, like, no, it's not true. Get out of here. And he sends her on her way. Well, as she's walking back to her building, because he's right next door, she's walking back to the building, she sees a service entrance next to the building. So she opens it up and goes down inside to check it out. So... gets through the cellar. She's walking around. It's very interesting. Like, it's very dark. And she just has like one match that she likes.
That's what I mean. Yeah. Like, these are very, like, he plays with shadows.
Yeah.
Very well.
Yeah.
In this movie, especially right here.
Yes.
But,
it's very dark. It's very eerie. She manages to get to where there's like a service area. There's like a service light or like kind of a work light that she hooks up to see if she can. First she's following this like trail of water that is carved like a path in the floor, and so she's following it along, and she gets over there, and as she's doing that, she drops her keys down inside. of this hole.
Mm-hmm.
And so she reaches in, and she can't feel it. So she shines the work light in and can see them. And now she's reaching down. She's trying to get a hold of them. And while she's reaching for that, somebody walks by and sees her in the cellar, sees the cellar open at least, and starts making their way down. So you kind of have this tension about, you know, what's going to happen. Somebody's, you know, coming after her. And so she is still reaching for him. She can't. So she takes her shoes off and she dives into the water. Well, lowers herself into the water. And it's, I thought this was really interesting. So she gets down in here and it looks like a full ballroom. Like they constructed a ballroom.
Yeah.
And then they filled the tank with water.
Yeah, obviously this is not CGI because right. It's the time. So it looks like they did.
And it's really, like sometimes you get scenes like this where it's too dark or murky to see anything.
You can't really see what's going
yeah.
on.
And yeah. And the way they filmed it, like it's very detailed. And because of where that work light is, it again plays a lot with shadows and things because the light is coming straight through that hole, and so it's illuminating things. So you can see like the golds of
you can see bits and pieces of things. You don't yeah. see things fully.
Yeah, and so you see
start
like
piecing stuff together.
You see like doors across the way. You see this ornate fireplace, and there's like a painting above it, and it says Mater, or like a banner that says Mater Tenebrarum on it. All sorts of stuff like that. And she finally manages to get her keys off the little sconce that it fell on, and then it falls to the ground. So she has to go back up for air.
Amazing. She can swim underwater and stay underwater under breath for a long time. She's really good at that.
Yeah, she's been practicing holding her breath for a long period.
She's Italian.
But no, she drops the keys, so she's like, damn it. So she goes up, gets more air, dives down for them. And so she's at the ground, and you can see the detail of the carpet and everything. So the other thing here is the sound, because I think like
oh, yeah.
a lot of times like when you have things with water, like you don't hear it or you don't hear things or they just do that rushing of water kind of sound, which is not what you would hear. Yeah, so here it's, or like they make it sound like you're in the ocean pretty yeah. much, but like this, she is, like you hear, it sounds like you do when you dive underwater. You hear when things hit each other and they kind of make that like thunk sound yeah. where the water's kind of, it's kind of a muted collision sound.
I don't know. Like, I have never dove down inside, you know, an old witch's kind of old area.
Oh, you never
at.
Did that?
No,
growing up? Weird. Okay. Yeah.
So I can't compare, Jeremy.
It does. It sounds just like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but it sounds, the sound I thought was really good in this. And as she is fetching the keys, there's this door that just keeps kind of slamming with like the motion of the water. And finally, a body floats out and like right up to her. And, of course, she's freaking out trying to get away from it. And she's, like, trying to kick it down while she's, you know, trying to get up. And then
I feel like they did not tell her that was going to happen.
That might be. I don't know about
that.
Like,
I really do. That seemed like that was genuine.
Yeah. And she's, like, you can kind of, it's great. You can kind of hear her scream, but not, like, that fakey, like, underwater, like, where they obviously
that's what I mean.
The scream. Like, yeah. it sounded really good. So she's trying to get away from it, and she gets to the ceiling, obviously not where the hole is, so she panics a little bit because, you know, how does she get out and how does she keep the body away? She finally, though, does find the way out and manages to get away.
She left her shoes there.
Yeah.
Girl, don't leave your shoes there.
No. No. Well, she's going to take them off if she's running anyway. Because she came down into this, like, underground labyrinth with, like, pumps.
Girl's got to work it, okay?
With open-toed pumps, nonetheless. If you're going to be in, like, the sewer or whatever the hell, you don't want open-toed anything.
She didn't know she was going to go down there. She was just mailing a letter to her brother in New York.
She
could have
come back. So
But it's not like she was like, I'm going to go mail my letter, but ooh, I should wear, you know, my combat boots instead in case I go down, you know, under a sewer.
Hey, you know. So, but she runs back inside the building and goes and hides. And you just start hearing this rumbling sound and this, like, sounds like something being hit or whatever's happening. Well, all that, the stuff in the cellar just starts, like, collapsing. And so whoever was watching her basically was making it all collapse. So now we cut to Rome.
Rome, if she wants to, roam around the world.
Indeed. So Mark is in Rome. He is taking a music class, so they're all listening to music.
Yeah, they got these really like huge headphones on.
Yeah.
And they're studying like music, and they got the sheets of music out. There are tons of people at this class.
Yeah.
How many people are taking this music appreciation class?
Oh, lots.
Tons.
And it's interesting, like, so in
these... Must have been like a wave of people in the 80s just taking music appreciation classes.
I'm sure
in
was.
Rome.
Well, yeah, you know. You have to.
Well, I guess you just do what the Romans do.
Yes. Kay. Yes, you do. No, the, it's interesting. So, like, in Suspiria, you had a, it was all dancers.
Yeah, that's true.
And in this one, you have a poet.
Poet, music,
and like, yeah, a music, yeah, student.
Yeah.
So, all these artistic folk.
Are we saying we shouldn't be artistic because weird stuff will happen to us?
Perhaps.
Okay.
It might. So, Mark is trying to read the letter from Rose in class.
Sorry, I'm just canceling my harmonica lesson. All right, good to go.
The mother of blues traveler. The mother of poppers.
He's going to kill me.
So he is trying to read the letter, but in the meantime, he's interrupted by Sarah, his friend Sarah, who shows up to class.
Late, by the way. Late Sarah.
But she joins in, and they're listening to their music. While they're studying, there's this girl who is just has a cat with her, which, okay, I guess in Rome, you just have the cat with you. And she is staring at him. And while she's staring at him, she's just kind of like muttering things to herself. And at one point, she's crying.
Do you think maybe they were studying the music from Cats, and that's why they had a cat?
It's like extra credit.
Mm-hmm.
She stands him up and dances him.
Well, this week we're doing Andrew Lloyd Webber. Everyone, get your headphones on.
Perhaps. Not optimal, but yeah, maybe. She's staring at him, and while she's staring at him, he starts getting like lightheaded.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel well.
It looks like he has memories. Like memories from the corner of my mind.
Yes. He's starting to look like Jellicle Cats. I'm pretty sure, and somebody correct me if I'm wrong, some listener. But I'm pretty sure that is supposed to be somebody who's at least possessed by, if not herself, the Mother of Tears.
First of all, it's so funny that you think we have listeners. Second, she's kind of like, doesn't she summon the air to come on?
Yeah, like the windows bust open.
The windows bust open.
And he starts getting...
And, oh, it's like, no one can see her except him, it seems like.
Yeah.
And no one feels the breeze.
Yeah.
You figure all these people...
He's the only one who starts feeling, like, sick from it.
Right.
Everybody else is just fine.
Right.
So I think she's supposed to be the Mater Lacrimarum, the Mother of Tears.
Okay.
Which is why she has tears in her eyes.
Oh.
So I think she's, like, the sorrow
personified. That's what it was. Oh, I didn't know that. I thought she had cataracts.
And her cat had human cataracts.
You got that joke. Thank you.
Yes. He ends up leaving. So his friend, Sarah, again, played by Eleonora Georgie picks up the letter, and later she goes and reads it.
Okay, she's like, she picks it up, and she goes, she wants to say, hey, Mark, you forgot a letter. But then she's like, what does one do when a friend forgets a letter? I'll take it and I'll read it.
Yeah, you know. So she's reading the letter, and she's freaked out because, you know, this has...
Don't read the letter!
Yeah, right? Well, she's freaked out by what Rose is
saying. She shouldn't have read the letter to begin with.
No, she probably shouldn't have. She's freaked up by what Rose is saying about the three mothers, so she decides she's going to go find a copy of it herself. So she,
in Rome.
Yeah. Now, in the original one that Rose was reading was in Latin.
Oh.
And so, so like, as she's reading it, you see, like, it starts talking at the beginning.
Yeah.
And she's going through it, and then she's, like, looking at the book. She kind of nods. And then pulls over, like, Webster's Latin to English dictionary. I was like, this is going to be a real slow burn.
This is going to be a slow burn.
You got to translate the whole thing as you go.
Three mothers.
Mothers.
Whew.
Doing good.
Oh.
They
got above this book.
So
Random House has a book in Rome.
Yes. So
for the three
sisters. Penguin Books.
So she goes to the
Rome
library,
branch.
Right?
Yeah, she's in the library.
This is my favorite scene of the movie.
Yeah,
by the
way. It's great. Like, so she's walking in.
Because of what happens. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, she's walking. It's very dark. Everything's very drab at this point.
I was being facetious when I said that, but go ahead.
About it being
my favorite scene of the movie.
Okay.
Because she goes up to the librarian, and she's like, I'm looking for the book, The Three Mothers. And he goes, right behind you. Like, I was like, what?
Yeah, that's how
it is. This is the biggest library I've ever seen. Yeah, the book that you're looking for, it's right behind you.
Right behind you.
And I magically was right there to tell you it was right behind you.
Well, what I was going to say was, so she's walking up. It's very drab. And you get to these, like, red curtains.
Right, that part's cool.
Right, that's very cool. So the camera kind of comes up to these red curtains, and then they pull apart, and you see this, like, gorgeous library.
That was amazing.
It was such a beautiful shot. And that's where we were kind of like, ooh, we can almost see, like, Wes Anderson.
Wes Anderson, how he has those curtains
in that
would
bit,
go.
Yeah. Like, and then it was very, like, balanced on each side of the shot. I mean, it was just very beautiful. And it's just books everywhere. And it's not exactly, like, vibrant, colorful, whatever, but the room is very well lit.
Yeah.
Compared to most of the other things that we've seen.
That's
far.
My favorite scene.
Yeah.
I'm just talking about like the whole library scene. I was like
the old
it was
guy
kind of,
who was like
it was very much the room like you're my favorite customer. Oh hi doggy. Like it was very like weird.
Yeah. She asked for the book and it just happens to be sitting
It was so
in
great.
The return right behind her.
We just had someone return that book.
We have
it's
it
right
for
behind you.
For easy evil access. So she gets the book and she's starting to look at it and they're like, library is closing. And so she goes, oops. Okay. So she goes to exit with the book. Like she's going to take it. And so she,
you're not checking out. You just take a book and roam.
And she doesn't have like a card. I'm going to guess. But
okay. So she's there and she's like trying to find an exit.
Well, she exits through like the cellar kind of door. And if you remember,
that's usually where you exit, through the cellar door.
Well, it says exit by it.
Yeah, that's true.
So, but she starts to exit that way. And I'm guessing that this is the Mother of Tears' place.
Is this library?
Yeah. That's her house. Because, now she's in the cellar, which is where they have all their power.
Now, you've seen the third movie.
Yeah.
Is it?
I can't remember.
You can't remember. Okay, no. That's fine.
But she starts walking around and trying to find her way out, and she cannot. And she makes her way to this room, and the room is like... It looks like an alchemist's like laboratory, so it's got a lot of like bubbling cauldrons, and so I don't know if this was shot by Bava or not, because to me it really reminded me of of his work, like with kind of the way it was framed and the colors and stuff, or like the way it looked. But like you see like different like cauldrons. One of them has some sort of goldish color bubbling stuff. I don't know if it's supposed to be gold or what, but basically you see this alchemy thing going on. I thought this setup and this like the shot of the room was very cool.
But didn't when she entered that, didn't I say, is that Voldemort's?
You were like, is that Voldemort? Yeah. So, but yeah, she's walking along, and she is kind of like, uh-oh, what's going on? And there's a monk in a robe who's over one of these things doing something, you know, alchemy-ish. And she's like, hey, how do I get out of here?
Okay.
What?
No, go ahead.
She's like, how do I get out of here? And he's like, oh, back through that way, through the other door. Okay, thank you. And like, it was just very nonchalant. Like, if I saw a monk doing all that, I would just, like, back out. Don't say anything.
Oh, I wouldn't even, like, approach. I would be like, I'm done.
Yeah. She
I wouldn't even walk in that thing. I'd be like, this is not the exit.
No. But she asks for help, and he's like, okay. Until he sees, in the reflection, he sees the three mothers on the front of the book.
Yes.
Which, I don't know if you saw this, in the mirror.
In the mirror.
It was forwards printed when he was looking at it.
Was it?
Yeah.
That's weird. I didn't think it was. I thought it was backwards.
Is it? I don't know. Maybe I just read it one way.
Uh-huh.
But he sees that it's that book, and so he turns around. Of course, he's all in shadow.
It's hard to tell. Yeah.
But he also, he pulls his glove off, and his hand is all, like, monster-ish. And
right. He hasn't been doing manicure for a while.
And that's true.
Yeah.
So he's like, the book. And she throws the book to the ground and gets away. And so she's hurries home. She takes a taxi home. And she's very paranoid at this point that somebody's following her. So she gets inside and she runs into some guy named Carlo in the elevator. And she's like, hey, I don't feel real easy. Will you, like, come hang out? And he's like, yeah, that's fine.
Sure, strange girl.
Yeah, so he goes to hang out at her apartment while she's, you know, things are cool. So they're on the fourth floor. And
they start playing records.
Yeah.
Music.
Yes.
And the electricity kind of starts kind of going in and out.
Yeah. So she's also tried to call Mark to come get her.
Right, that's true.
And she's like, come over here. I read your sister's letter. You need to get your butt over here. I think something's after me.
This guy is also a writer. He's a sports writer.
He's a sports writer.
Yeah.
And so he's, you know, they're talking about Supernatural. He's like, I don't believe that crap.
He's like, I'm only in season 7.
Everything starts flashing on and off, which it did this to Rose earlier, too, where the lights kind of flicker on and off. So lights are going in and out, and it's kind of, I like the way they played with the sound here, too. Like, it's this big concerto, and every time the lights go out, the music stops, and when the lights come back on, it just starts right away, and so it keeps kind of cutting in and out. And it doesn't do the whole record thing where it's like...
Right. That's why I liked about it. It felt like it was real and it didn't feel like it was a gimmick. It felt like when... It didn't feel like it was an audio drop.
Yeah.
It felt like that was the record that they were playing. And it went... Zoop! You know how like when your electricity goes off and your TV goes off, it goes off right away.
Yeah.
There's no like sound that goes... Zoop!
Yeah. Or where it's like slowing down.
Slowing
that
down?
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
And so I like that. And I like the effect because it made it real for me.
It was creepy to me.
It was creepy.
Yeah. And so so it keeps going in and out and finally just stops. And so Carlo suggests that, hey, like maybe it's just too much stress on the circuits. And so he's like, let me go check your fuses.
All this sounds sexual, Jeremy.
It is. It's all Italian foreplay. Have a good check in.
Check your fuse box.
So
it's down the hall.
Yes, it's in the service closet, like at the end of the hall.
Yeah.
And so he goes to check that, and she's like, talk to me so I know where you are at all the times. So he goes, will do, and then says nothing.
Nothing.
The entire way there. Thanks, dude.
I will.
Yeah.
5 minutes later. Are you there, Carlos?
I'm not going to do that.
Carlos, I'm here.
Yeah, Carlo. And then so finally he calls. He's like, see, is that working? Because the lights come back on. And he stops talking. She gets there, and around the corner, he comes out, and he has this knife stuck through his throat, like from the left side to the right side, basically just stuck through his neck.
It's usually how it happens.
Yeah, and so he is falling on her, and he's trying to, he's just, you know, flailing at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but he's also dripping that, like, red, inky, you know, Italian horror movie-style blood all over them. And so she's trying to get away. She's got blood all over her, and they run off, or she's trying to run off, and the killer stabs her in the back. Now, I will point out that the killer, and you see this multiple times in this movie as well, so the killer wears these black gloves, which is very stylistic of Italian horror films, or actually Italian cinema as far as like suspense, thrillers, murder mysteries, things like that go. That style is called, they have a style of movies called giallo.
Okay. Giallo.
And well, it's Italian for yellow.
Giallo.
Giallo. Italian for yellow. Because back after, after the fall of fascism in Italy, there were these like murder mystery books that were put out. They were just kind of trashy pulp, you know, horror or like murder novels, but they came in these yellow jackets, these yellow book jackets or covers, which is where they got the term giallo from. But in those, most times they were wearing like black gloves and things like that. So that became very stylized. You'll see a lot of times in like Italian movies, like where a killer, all you see is their black gloves when they go in to kill.
Yeah.
And Argento uses that a lot in
and
a lot of movies.
You can tell, like, when the murderer can get away with a crime, it's because the gloves don't fit that well. And so if they don't fit, you must acquit.
It's
Jeremy.
True. It's true.
Just saying.
Yeah. No, it's a very famous.
So she gets stabbed in the back.
Yeah, she gets stabbed
by Mark.
Back.
Wait, no, I'm just joking.
So Mark shows up eventually. And he's trying to figure out where she was, and he finds like torn fragments from his sister's letter, and so he's like, huh, okay, like you can't really read what it says in there. Obviously it was giving him important information, but he can't read it, and so he's trying to figure it out. He's walking, and then there's this like sheet that's up. And he kind of walks up to it, and he's looking and trying to figure out what it was, or curtain, or whatever it is. And all of a sudden, you see fingernails come through it and just, like, shred it. And it's Sarah. It's her body comes falling through it. But she, like, must have just been hanging on there and shredded it and fell through and died. But, like, it's a cool shot, I think, where all of a sudden you see, like, this flat piece of material, and all of a sudden there's like nails come through and like start shredding it. So
her nickname is Shredder.
It is. That's what inspired the character.
Yes,
of Shredder.
Yes.
So the police arrive, and you know they found both the bodies and everything like that. So Mark,
police do the police thing. I don't know if like Rome police are different than American police. But when you just found your kind of maybe girlfriend, I don't know, dead in her apartment, and you're leaving it, and the cops are there, and they're like, what did you see? Well, she's dead. And then you walk away. No questions.
No, that's fine. That's fine. Oh, and this gal who you know, obviously was calling you over, there was another guy in her place.
Right.
That could never be motive for you to do anything.
No, not at all.
So he leaves Sarah's apartment, he sees a taxi, and in the backseat of the vehicle, he sees that girl just staring at him again.
Oh, uh-huh.
The, like, mother of tears-ish.
She's got the cat still.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
So later, Mark...
That's really catty of her, just to do that through a cab. I mean...
Yeah. Yeah, they should put her through a feline of questioning.
They really should. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be perfect. Perfect, don't you think?
Yeah. He should confront her, but he's too much of a... You know what? Never mind. The, So Mark now, he's obviously had this trauma. So Mark goes and telephones Rose to talk to her and figure out what she, you know, tell him what's going on and that he's like, hey, I didn't get to read your letter. She's trying to talk to him, but of course, you know, their like international call is not very clear, or this one wasn't. So he can't hear her clearly. So he just promises to visit right before the connection goes dead on the phone. So, in the meantime, Rose sees two people, or just, like, kind of shadows, preparing to enter her apartment. So she's like, I'm getting the hell out of here. So she leaves through the back door. And so she's running, and you kind of see her going through, like, different parts of this building that are run down or things are kind of broken apart.
Yeah.
Like through, she goes through this like spiral staircase type area. I mean, she's getting away. And then like one time she freezes and you see what's like painted black, like the faces, except for like the yellow eyes. You see the yellow eyes really well. So she freaks out and runs. So she's grabbed by this, by somebody who has claws, kind of like the person in Rome. And so she breaks through part of the glass in this window, and he ends up grabbing her like from behind, pulling her head down so it's like stuck on these little nails, so mm-hmm. she can't really roll around or wiggle away too much.
Sure.
And the glass in the window starts sliding down. Like a guillotine, so it's like coming down, and it rests against her neck. So the guy with the claws raises it and then brings it back down on her neck and keeps doing that. And you see blood just spraying everywhere. But he just keeps doing that until she's dead. So Rose is gone.
A rose is a rose is a rose is a rose.
Yes.
And now she's dead.
Yes. So Mark gets to New York, goes straight to Rose's building, and he meets Carol, who's the concierge, some of the other people. So there's like a nurse who's taking care of, Professor Arnold,
mm-hmm.
Who doesn't really speak. He doesn't talk to anybody.
Professor Arnold is my favorite, game piece in Clue. Oh, wait, that's Professor Plum. Never mind. Keep going.
Yeah. So he, and of course, Professor Arnold, while he's talking to him, is like scratching at his briefcase. I think it says Mater Tenebrarum or just Mater on it. He might just like that character from the Cars movie. Toe Mater is my favorite.
Toe Maters.
I'm
a spy.
So also in the as he comes in, you see Carol and like some kid chopping up a bunch of meat, which maybe wouldn't be anything except when Mark comes in, they wrap it like what like it's a suspicious package.
Mm.
So I'm thinking. Well, a rose by any other name would still be a bunch of meat.
That, don't forget the rosemary and thyme.
That's a pot rose.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
Mark goes when he gets upstairs. He ends up talking to like you hear somebody calling, And he's like, what the hell is that? Like, you can hear a voice. Well, apparently there's all these old tubes that, like, let audio travel, like, so they can be heard from one central location. So it must have been, you know, we get the sense that somebody's listening to everybody. So he meets the Countess Elise de Longueville Adler, who's played by Daria Nicolodi. And she is ill, so she's kind of, you know, bound at home. And she says, hey, I haven't seen Rose for a while now. And so you don't see it, but they don't pay attention to it at the beginning, but there's, like, little droplets of what looks like blood on the ground.
Right.
So they look around. They don't really see anything. They talk for a few. She goes back home where her butler, Rod Serling, is her butler.
Her butler, Taco, the singer.
Yeah, her butler is just this creepy-looking dude. He is drawing a bath for her.
Yeah, and we don't mean, like, drawing on a picture.
No, like running the bath.
Right.
And so you get this kind of cool over-the-head shot as he's, like, getting the bath ready, which, again, we were like, oh, cool. Like, remind us of Wes Anderson kind of a thing. Like, you can see where maybe he borrowed.
Well, maybe
borrowed,
for you, but.
He borrowed from, you know, or was inspired
by. Who knows?
By
you know, people are inspired by everyone.
Yeah. Well, it was cinematically, it was very good. So.
Yeah.
So, while she's sitting there, she realizes that she's got some drops of blood, like, on her foot, and she can't figure out where it's from. So she heads back to talk to Mark.
Can I say, I don't think, maybe it's from Jupiter. And actually she has drops of Jupiter. Yeah, yeah.
You dare make a train reference in the, how dare you?
Come on, ride the train.
Yeah, okay, that one's okay. That is okay. The end song to this movie.
To this movie.
Come on, ride that train.
That makes sense.
So she goes back and she's like, Mark, there's blood somewhere here. And so they look around for it, and they find the blood by the door. And so they're like, okay, well, let's see if we can follow it. So they're
That's
following.
That's usually a good idea, to follow blood.
You know, it was 1980. We were all pretty brave then, apparently.
I wasn't.
Well, yeah.
I was two.
You were two?
Or one, maybe.
I was maybe born.
Yeah.
Depending upon when this was filmed. So they're following the blood. And they find the kind of the path that Rose had run. And he gets down into the room with, like, a spiral staircase. And he looks through this like kind of porthole thing. And you can... There's, like, gas basically coming out of it, or some sort of, like, mystical air or something coming out of it, just like before. And he starts getting real nauseous and starts kind of falling down. You know, like, it's obviously affecting him.
Is it affecting him because right now there is no plot in this movie?
Yeah, it's the plot is.
The plot is very thin.
Yeah. Yeah. But that happens a lot of times with the second one where. Mm. It's setting up for, like, the grand, especially when people have the idea of a trilogy in mind. It's like the first one sets your story, and the second one is a lot of times just building to the third. And so I think maybe that's kind of what was happening here a little bit was.
If you say so.
But so, so he's kind of out of it. And so the Countess. She is trying to get him up, trying to get him going. Well, first she sees somebody trying to drag him away. And then she's trying to call for him to get him going. It doesn't work. The black robed figure starts chasing her. And she runs to a room. And... this is where, this was our cat's favorite part in the movie. So she runs, and this cat runs and, like, jumps on her back, and she knocks it off, and then another. And so there's, like, you know, 20 cats jumping at her.
Right.
And they are all over her. And so, like, you can really see, like, I think they had padding on whoever it was.
whoever
like
it was.
Those cats were really getting riled
up. They were
up.
Really getting riled. Like, I was speechless. I mean, a cat had my tongue. I mean, it was just so, like, I couldn't talk.
I think during that you went, cat got your tongue?
I did.
And we had to.
I did.
It was required.
It was required. Yes. If you're going to watch a movie and like 700 cats are going to attack and kill.
They weren't like, they just weren't like stuffed cats. These were real cats. They were tossing
at her.
They
were real cats.
And so they were getting mad and like you could see them like lashing out
at her. And it's not like when you watch some of these horror movies in the 80s where they have a bunch of animals attack and then they show them close up and you could see they're animatronic kind of way. These were real cats.
Yes.
It's really freaky.
Yeah.
To have that realness, it kind of freaks you out a little bit.
Yes. And so she's on the ground, just overpowered by these cats. And then the hooded figure comes in and ends up stabbing her to death.
Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah. Stabbing her to death.
Stabbing her to death.
And so
In the meantime.
You see, Mark manages to make his way to the lobby where he's out of it and he kind of passes out and he's like talking that he's in pain or he's sick. He thinks something's wrong with his stomach or his heart or whatever. And they're like, oh my, they're just kind of standing looking. And the nurse goes, well, I have some medicine for that.
Right.
And so she gives him this clear liquid. I think it was just straight vodka.
Oh, I thought it was like flat Sierra Mist, which is worse.
Oh, yeah. That is good for a painful stomach.
It really is.
It's flat 7-Up.
Here you go.
We'll get you some bananas.
That'll fix the plot. Give it some flat 7-Up.
Give it some flat 7-Up and bananas. He's zonked out. So later he wakes up in his room. And they're like, oh, you're awake. Great. And so he is trying to figure out what was happening, what's been going on. He goes to Kazanian's place next door because he knows that's who sold Rose to Three Mothers and asks about her. He doesn't give any information. But we know that Kazanian's been having problems with the cats from next door, the same ones that attacked the Countess showing up in his place and pissing him off.
Yep.
So Kazanian has a cat in his place, and so he grabs it. And we're like, okay, he's going to take it outside or throw it out or whatever. So he's got it by the scruff of his neck, and this thing is fine at first, but he's going a while, so the cat's getting pissed off. Then he hits the cat's head against a chair. This was a fake cat where he hit the fake cat's head.
Still creepy.
I know, and I was like, oh. But then he puts it in a burlap sack with a bunch of the other cats.
Real cats.
Yeah, and they do not look pleased to be in a sack together.
No? Would you?
No.
Is this where also someone steals his 400 copies of the Mother's book?
Yes.
The Three Mothers?
Yes, he runs...
I'm like, how many books are there? I thought this was, like, a really rare book.
He runs the Barnes & Noble.
Random House, like, Barnes & Noble
yes,
in
like,
New York?
It's the Scholastic Press outlet store.
Maybe that is the Tom Hanks connection, because Tom Hanks had, like, that bookstore, and You Got Mail.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe, like, this is Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
No, it's not. No.
So Kazanian takes all those cats from the witch's house, takes them into Central Park, and because the
is that where he was?
They said, yeah, they said it's gonna be a full lunar eclipse, and they're like, it's the first time we're gonna have one in 46 years. And I don't know about you, but it seems to me like we got lunar eclipses like every like pretty regularly.
Did we have one last week?
We have them all the time. I'm sure of it.
Did.
Like it's pretty frequent. 46 years seems odd, but he says the first 46 time in
Years is even, Jeremy. Six is an even number.
You're correct. So he goes to the water and drowns the cats. He takes his crutches.
This guy's the worst.
Yeah. He drowns two bags full of cats, sticks them down into the mud or whatever. And as he turns around to leave, his crutches get stuck, and he falls for it because he can't walk without them.
So there's tons of rats.
Yeah, he's in the water.
And that's why I didn't know where we were. I thought we were in New Jersey because there was tons of rats everywhere.
No, this is like the... It's water, like runoff water or something.
From
like
New
that.
Jersey.
Yes.
It has to be.
Yeah. And so you see a few rats at first. And they're kind of staying away. But then you see the lunar eclipse starts or has started. And all of a sudden the rats are just pouring out. And they start biting him and chewing on him and like tearing him up.
Again, this is like, looks like it's real rats.
Oh, those are rats. Those
I know. But what I'm saying is it's so real.
Yeah.
It's freaky and creepy, and yes. I hated every minute of it. And I loved it, too.
Yeah. So he's saying, he's like, please help me, help me. And so he's begging for help. So you see the guy, there's a guy in this, like, it was like a hot dog vendor or something across the way, across the little lake or the pond. You see kind of him working in the distance. But he hears him, and so he runs over to go. You're like, okay, he's going to go help him. So he runs over there. We never see the guy's face. But then, like, he just takes out his knife and just chops Kazanian in the neck. Just kills him. And we were like, I was kind of like, what? But I think what's happening is because of the lunar eclipse, the shadows extend further than ever.
Oh.
And so her power was bigger. The Mother of Shadows. Power was like
because of the shot. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, she's at full power, so she was able to take over that guy. She was able to take over those rats where maybe her power wouldn't have extended to do that before.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So more deaths occur in the building. So the butler. You see, the butler is...
the body count in this movie is crazy.
Yeah. Well, the butler is going through the countess's stuff and is like, okay, I'm going to take her money. I'm going to take whatever. We're going to, we'll say that she left for somewhere.
Right. Take her jewels and
money. Yeah, but we're going to keep the money.
Yeah. And run.
Yeah. And so Carol's like, finally, we'll be in charge. And so she... leaves to go do something.
Mm-hmm.
She hears a bunch of like crashes and a bunch of sound because somebody has gone after the butler. She comes back up and like his eyes have been pulled out.
The butler did it.
The butler pulled out his own eyes?
Yep. Pulled out his own eyes.
Makes sense. But she is like, oh my God. And so like she's...
That looked kind of, I don't know, weird.
That was weird. But I kind of like, so she walked out with... she took a candle.
She took this candle, by the way, that looked like a Twizzler.
Yeah. So there's a candelabra. It's got five candles on it. So she lights one of them. And then instead of lighting the other five and giving herself five candles worth of light, she just takes the one candle out of the candelabra. Cool.
Cool.
And so she walks around and she's squinting.
Cool.
Because she could have had five times the light, but didn't. So she's
how do you feel about that, Mirage?
Mirage, how do you feel about
our
cat?
Our cat was all... How do you feel about all the cat puns in this episode? Huh? Okay.
Yeah, she was not happy about that.
Nope.
The candle, she's walking with it. And when she sees the butler, she's like, holy shit. And she drops the candle and starts running. Well, when she starts running, she realizes, oh, shit, wait, I dropped the candle, because she sees some flickering and she knows that something's on fire.
Yeah.
And so she runs back and this whole like drape thing is like already on fire.
Right.
And it burns all the way to the top and then it falls off and completely covers her.
So there's a lot of like flames going.
Yeah. And so she's all on fire inside this thing, basically.
Meanwhile, Mark is in his room.
Well, she backs up and falls out the window.
Oh, she falls out the window.
Through into another part of the building now, which is starting on fire.
Which is starting on fire. Mark is in his room checking out the ants.
Yes.
That have infested his room.
Yes.
Noticing that they are walking along the floorboards and that there might be something underneath there because they keep coming from the floorboards, right?
Yes. And so he, because that was, he's like, look under the soles of your shoes for like the third piece. Right. So,
as long as those shoes are not those high heel shoes.
Correct. Wearing. Yes. Yeah. So he finds a crawl space under the ground. So he's able to kind of bust it open. And he goes down into this hidden passage, to a suite of rooms that are not on the map.
Did you see the door? It said plot. And then he walked in and there was a plot.
No, that's where they keep it.
Yeah.
No, so he goes in and he finds Professor Arnold, who puts on this like kind of like speech box thing, some sort of voice generator, who reveals that he is Varelli. He was the guy who built the, who wrote the book and like built the houses for the witches. And now he's kind of their slave.
And Mark was like, enjoy your work. I've gotten like 4 copies of that book.
I love it. You made so many of these rare books. So he sticks Mark with this hypodermic needle when he gets in too close. And so Mark knocks him over. He starts to fall over, but the cord that's attached to his voice box thing is like hanging him, basically.
Yeah.
And Mark, in the meantime, sucks the poison out of his own arm. Yeah. So he's like sucking it out, spitting it across the room. He goes back. He ends up saving Varelli, like, so he's not choking. But he's told, you know, we're being watched at all times. Everything in here is being watched. And he turns around and there's like a shadow in the door that's like, oops, and kind of like backs away.
Oops. That wasn't supposed to be in this shot.
And then Varelli dies. Yeah. The professor dies. So Mark follows the shadowy figure and finds this just gorgeous chamber. And it reminds me of the chamber from Suspiria, where like you get to the final internal chamber and it's just this like beautiful compared to everything else, just this gorgeous chamber. And so that's where he finds Varelli's nurse. She's just kind of laying on the table. And we realize that she is Mater Tenebrarum. So she's been the witch. And she is just laughing like crazy. And they do this cool... I thought it was cool. She's standing in front of this mirror with him, and you see both of them in the mirror. And then at one point, like, the lights flicker, and she's gone from, like, where we would see her. But then you see her kind of in the mirror, but they don't really focus on that shot. It's just kind of, you can catch that she's in it.
Okay, I didn't quite catch that.
Yeah, and so then he's confused. He's looking around, and you see her in the mirror then, start yelling at him, and she's like walking up to the mirror. She's like, you know, it's all over. This whole place is burning. She's like, you know, don't you understand what we are? And she said, we are death. And she does that, and she's like banging on the mirror while she's saying it. And when she pounds on the mirror, the glass of the mirror breaks, and then she's like this personification of death behind it.
Really? I thought it was one of David S. Pumpkin's henchmen.
It was. Okay. That's one of the. That's who those Beat Boys are.
They're two of the three mothers.
Yeah. The mother of funk.
Any questions?
So since there's so much on fire,
yes.
And like
where's the
place,
plot again?
The place is starting to come down.
Yeah. So everything is on fire. Yeah. And Mark's pretty calm about that for some reason.
Yeah.
But he was calm when his girlfriend / friend died, so.
Yeah. So at this point, because this is his chance to escape, and he gets the hell out of there.
Yeah.
And then behind him, you see all this debris starting to crash down on the mother of shadows, and basically destroys her, and the building is collapsing. And that is the end.
I would say that you've been deuced, Jimmy. Deuce. This is quite an enjoyable-looking movie.
Yes.
There's lots of times where I was like, where is this going? Because we weren't following much of a plot. We were following characters that I was like, we are way too, like, on these characters too much.
Yeah.
Which I didn't know why.
Well,
but I get it.
My only beef with, like, as far as this goes, I'm not usually such a big fan of, like, I don't like when somebody's like, oh, then they tell you that this is the worst of all of the, like, she's the most evil of all of the witches, you know?
Yeah.
And because then when, like, I don't think what she was doing was necessarily more horrific than what was happening in the first one in Suspiria. Yeah. And so, to me, it's like, well, okay, then it didn't quite have the hype or live up to that. But then the... I also think, like, this movie was setting up for the third one a lot, because you were in Rome, and you have the Mother of Tears starting to show up, and it's like, okay, you were kind of unfocused as to the story in New York. Like, you really should have focused mainly on that.
On New York,
Even if you gave a sneak peek of the Mother of Tears, you know, it should have been, almost completely in New York.
Well, that's what we thought of it.
Yes.
Let's hear what other people thought of it, shall we? Dataclast gave it a 2 out of 10. Says, wow, .. I'm sorry, but this movie was a travesty. I completely respect Argento's style and understand that plot is not what he concerns himself. But this movie was a waste of time. At least Suspiria and Deep Red, there was enough of a plot to sustain one's interest. Even so, this is not truly that I dislike about this film. Where his other films may lack substance, I find that there have substance, just in a different form. They made up with the nightmarish insanity of the heart-stopping violence. This had none of that.
I think that's a bunch of baloney.
It is a bunch of baloney.
Like, I'm sorry.
I think you were just disappointed because
this movie doesn't have the strongest of plots.
No.
But it still had a plot. It really did.
Yeah, it really did.
It just was not the strongest of the bunch. And, like, it's better than some movies I've seen where you're like, what the shit is going on? Or it makes no sense. Like, at least, even if it's not strong, it's there.
So this this person gave it an 8 out of 10. They are the Slow Wizard. And they, 8 out of 10, oh, Dario, you crazy, crazy man. Hmm. Okay, here's the deal. If you need a coherent movie with a plot, skip this one. If you're interested in Dario Argento, but haven't seen any of his films, start with something else. If you're a fan, do yourself a favor and buy this one. Inferno is weird, makes no sense, but is a gorgeous horror film. I loved it.
I think it... I don't know. I'm not 100% in love with that one either, because I think it makes sense. It, again, just not his strongest work. But...
I agree with that.
You don't think it makes any kind of sense?
I think it makes enough sense, but I think there's a lot that I'm like, what?
Oh, yeah. Like, that's what... It can be stronger. It
definitely
could have
been.
There's a
lot of, like, questions I have in this movie where
right.
I'm like, you didn't really answer anything.
Right. But to be like, it's weird, and if you aren't interested in him, you know, putting story to something, I'm like,
this is a weird movie.
It is weird.
I enjoyed it. That's why it was weird.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But
but you know what, though? I caught stuff when I watched it this time that I really didn't see the first time I saw it.
I think you could probably do that with this film.
Well, that's what happened with Suspiria. And the second time I watched it, I noticed, like, a bunch of little things, like things with the shadows. Like, there's this one part where it looks like some shadows, like, move over the courtyard. It's supposed to be, like, the witches flying by or something like that. Court was pointed out to me the second time I watched it.
But Suspiria.
Like, yes. And so, like, this has some of that in there, too. I do think it suffers, I do think it was just trying to be like, this is the second part of the series. We're going to give you something until we get to our grand finale.
Well,
And, you know, I think it suffered a little bit as a result of that, but it's a beautifully shot movie.
We can talk more about that in our 5 questions.
Yeah, let's do it.
Shall we?
Yeah.
So let's do that.
So what do you think is the best part of the movie?
Well... The music is very well, like, it's heightened.
Yeah.
It does well for the story. But it's hard to beat the visuals and the cinematography and the lighting of this movie. There's just something about this movie that is beautiful to look at. I'm kind of with that last review that there's a lot of that I don't know what's going on. And when you're watching this movie,
yeah,
and you might not be familiar with him, you don't know what's going on a lot.
Yeah.
But you are enjoying what you're watching because it's very visual and very beautiful to look at.
Yeah.
This movie is very beautiful. It's easy to see the influences that came over him and the influences that came after him.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I was talking to you before we were recording, and I was talking about Douglas Sirk.
Yes.
And how he used his cinematography was so beautiful, where it was very epic and sweeping.
Yes, I agree.
And very, like, he involved a lot with colors and lighting. You see that with this. This is obviously not a sweeping drama.
Yeah.
But I'm like, what if Douglas Sirk, like, made a horror movie? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And granted, like, he kind of took a lot from French film.
Yes.
But, you know, hey, I'm sure that, you know, Sirk.
Well, Bava borrowed from those same influences.
Right. Like,
or was inspired by some of those same influences.
It's hard not to see that.
He passed that on to Argento.
Yeah.
I think the cinematography really is what did it for me. What, like, keeps me hanging on with this too. Like I was saying, and I kind of pointed them out as we went. So, like, the library shot, or like the shot overhead when he was drawing the bath, or there's a shot when Mark comes into the room with the spiral staircase where he gets gassed or whatever. But, like, the shot is from down below, and it has it at this angle on, like, of the room. And with him on top of the staircase, and you get just the idea of the size and scope of this room, and like the way the shadows fall and everything. And even when, like, you get into these danger moments, and like the color is so vibrant one moment and so drab and shadowy the next. Yeah. Like, I think the cinematography on this is fantastic.
Can I tell you that when she opened those red curtains, and like in the camera panned, that was one of the best scenes I've ever seen in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
That seriously, like, just blew me away.
Oh, yeah.
It's like one of those things where you watch Hitchcock and you're like, how did he do that?
Yes.
Like, that's what you get from this. You're,
yeah,
like,
absolutely.
How did he do that? That was pretty clever.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I agree. Yeah. Would you reboot, continue, or cancel this movie?
Well, they are rebooting Suspiria.
Yes, which
But we're talking about this movie.
Yeah.
No. I like that it is in its own universe.
Yeah.
I don't even like that they're redoing Suspiria.
I don't. I'm kind of interested to see what
I'm
they do
interested
with it.
To see what they do with it, but like I don't. I'm not, because I'm like.
Yeah, I'm really concerned with it.
Yeah. It's like Spike Lee's Old Boy, right?
Yeah.
It's like remaking that. Like, why would you?
Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
I tell Hollywood all the time, because I got them on speed dial, redo bad movies, don't redo good movies.
Yeah, exactly.
Make bad movies better.
Yeah. You know, they do continue into the Mother of Tears, but to me, like, I had a hard time. I know, like, we watched them when I watched it with Court. We made sure we watched them in order and got to the last one.
Did you watch them all three in order?
Yeah.
Okay.
But when we did, it was just like there was such a disconnect, because it was like,
yeah, that movie
like,
seems
it
like it
didn't
would be
like
cinematography.
No, to say cinematographic.
Cinematographically,
give it a cinematic.
Yeah, you can't talk either, like me.
The from a cinematography
Cat
standpoint,
got your tongue?
It looks so different. Yes, 20 of them did. from the cinematography standpoint, it just looks so different.
Right.
Like, that it was hard for me. It kind of takes me out of it. I'm like, it doesn't even feel like it's part of the
but
same.
But what I'm saying, okay, like, look at, even watching previews of the House of Tears, right? Is that what it's called?
Mother of Tears.
The Mother of Tears, I'm sorry. Yeah. Even watching previews of that, I'm like, you could have done something that brought it back and not, like, modernized it. So you could have done something like the House of the Devil.
Yes.
Where you had that kind of aesthetic of that movie,
yeah,
and made it more retro
aesthetic,
looking,
yeah,
and go back and still have where you're paying homage to yourself,
yeah,
in a way, to make it more of a cohesive trilogy. I feel like it's like there's two pieces that really do go along together, and then like this this hat piece that you're like.
It makes me. I'm really interested to see. So like the Suspiria, like the updated version of it, it concerns me a little bit. Like obviously, I'm like, oh boy, what are you gonna do? Is it gonna be good? Is it gonna live up? Like what's gonna happen with it? I'm very interested to see like if it does well and if they give it a sequel, if it'll be Inferno, or if they'll keep this going and make like.
And will Tom Hanks be in that one?
Will he also be in that one? I'm just very interested to see if it's going to be the continuation. It's going to be a complete remake of the Three Mothers trilogy, or if it'll be if they'll be like Suspiria 2 and go and do something different.
Really hope it's Suspiria 2. Go ahead.
Okay. Do you think this stands on its own?
This is a no, because of the whole mythos that he builds. It's all, well, I don't know.
It kind of
does in a way.
I think it does because it's the only thing they do is they mention Freiburg, Germany. It's not even really important to the story.
Not really, because the story's kind of a little, you know.
Yeah. If I had never seen Suspiria, I would think, oh, we're going to do a story about the other two mothers, and not knowing that one
that's
of them
true,
happened.
True, because they talk about, they go, here are the three mothers.
Yeah, and they never say
these
that
are the
something
three
happened.
Things. We never really say that the one mother, you know, what happened to her. So
So I think uh-huh. It stands on its own. Does this make you want to watch the first one?
Absolutely makes me want to watch the first one.
Yes.
Seeing the colors and seeing the cinematography and seeing, I don't know why, I just want to watch that.
Yeah.
Like I said, when we watched that at Schmalamau Draft House, I didn't know if I'd like. I remember we're like, do you want to go see this? I'm like, I guess so. I wasn't really that thrilled. After watching it, I was like, wow, because you can see the influence that he had, and like, I'm a very person that likes when I listen to a piece of music or watch a show or watch a movie where I can tell where. And influence began and more, or where it ended and where more began.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, everything's derivative. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But, like, you spin it and you make it your own, and then hopefully you can influence other people. And I feel like he did. So, yes, it makes me want to watch the first one. It's my roundabout way of saying yes.
Yes. And I will just say yes. I mean, for... pretty much the same reasons. Like I
kind of
want
to. Kind of. It makes me interested to watch the third one too.
Yeah.
If I did, I would watch it how you guys did and watch it trilogy.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
No, it's good. It is a little jarring when you do the third one just because it's so different.
Yeah, especially if you're doing it back to back. Yeah. To back, that seemed like it would be.
Yeah.
Very visually.
But I'm glad it was done too. I am glad it was done, like because I wanted the Three Mothers trilogy to be completed. After watching the first two with Corton, I was like, where's the third?
Right.
And then it didn't happen. It's like the Henry Fool trilogy. Like when
For
Ned
a while
Rifle,
there, yeah. We were watching like,
when
the
we
Henry
kept
Fool
wondering
trilogy.
When Ned Rifle was going to be Rifle. Out. And then it was finally came out. And yeah.
Yeah.
So, sum your experience up in two words.
Eye candy is my word. Because this is very much... I'm gonna be honest with you. I could give a shit about the plot.
Yeah,
the plot is important a little bit because it helps set up the third movie. Visually, I was interested in this whole movie. There was a moment in this movie about maybe an hour and 12 minutes into it that I was like, "Oh, this is a long movie."
Yeah,
but at least I was being visually rewarded for my efforts.
Yeah,
of watching it, and I think that if you are gonna watch this movie. Just be aware that it's not, like that reviewer said, you're not going for plot.
Yeah.
You really are.
Yeah.
So that's my two words.
Mine is, it's a beautiful.
It's a beautiful. That's three words. It's a beautiful.
No, it's a, is one word.
Okay.
It's a beautiful. It's me, Mario.
Seriously, is that your two words?
Yeah.
Why?
It's beautiful. Because it's beautiful.
It is a beautiful.
It's a very beautifully shot movie, and you just can't beat some of the cinematography with that. And the colors and everything, like, there's something to be said for, like, being able to play with a movie that's vibrant one moment and shadowy and drab the next, and being able to blend the two of them to really, like, I mean, really, the cinematography piece of this drives a lot of the emotion. Like, you know, I found myself being like, I don't know what the hell Mark is doing. Like, just kind of like he's wandering around the building. Like,
There's a lot of this where you're like, what are they doing? But then you're like, I don't care. I want to watch them walk around this building.
But the shots, the shadowiness, like, where it almost, I mean, he has this talent for making the shadows look like they're these living, like, moving things. And some of that's Bava, who had some, like, tricks that he was showing or he was incorporating himself or helping Argento do those. You know, that really comes into play there. And I think, like, the suspense I do feel or, like, the sense of danger that I do feel really comes from the visual aspect of it. And so it's a beautifully shot movie. And I think that what it does do is thanks in part to the visualization, but not necessarily to the plot piece of it. I think it's not the strongest plot of a movie.
It's like,
but it's visually.
When you made me watch Mirror Mask, and I was like, this is a very beautiful movie.
Yeah.
But the plot is very not quite there.
Yeah. It doesn't have the mythology like some of the other movies from those do.
But I love it. Like, yeah. I love watching, like, looking at it. It's so beautiful.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I agree. Okay.
Did you see, like, influences with color and, like, and like movies like The Fall, which are very much influenced with color.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff like that. So it's just amazing. So anyway, we recommend watching this movie and watching The Predecessor.
Yeah.
And maybe giving the third one a chance.
I would say if you're in for a penny, you're in for a pound. Go watch the trilogy.
In.
Watch the trilogy.
Don't let a cat grab your tongue.
No.
Go all in.
Also, like, we didn't say this during there, but there's a lot of, like, there were cats eating mice in the movie.
There were jarring moments that you're like, ew.
Yeah, I was like, that is not a dead mouse that cat is eating.
There's a lot of ants, a lot of mice, and a lot of cats.
Yeah. A lizard eating a bug.
There's a lot of, like, PETA does not like this movie.
No, it's not a big PETA film.
Where can people find us, Jeremy?
People can find us at thedeucepodcast.podbean.com.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I know. Facebook, you can find us on Google Play, Stitcher, iTunes. If you're going on iTunes, please make sure that you rate us.
Rate us.
Rate us.
Rate us.
Also, you can find us at the nophonynetwork.com. This month's featured podcast is the BS3 Sports and Music.
Do it. Listen to them.
So they are excellent. And then there's many others on there. That are also excellent. I don't think there's anything on there that I'm like, eh. It's all, you have these very talented people who are working together to put out these great products. So make sure that you at least give each of them a chance, you know, and then go from there.
Yeah, I mean, not every podcast is for everyone.
Right.
But go and listen to them and go, okay, I'll give these guys a chance.
Yeah. Let's face it.
Or women. I don't want to be sexist.
No phony pocket. It's not for everyone.
That's their new motto.
That's our new tourism motto. It's terrible.
That's what I heard.
You can find us also on
Twitter. Ray said it. I heard him.
And Twitter, at The Deuce Podcast. So please go check us out. We will tweet things there.
And
we retweet a lot of our other partner podcasts.
There you go. And we will finish our Witchapalooza tour. Witchapalooza was that tour with a very special Halloween episode coming up next this Wednesday, Halloween.
This Wednesday, yeah.
We'll release it. And that, of course, is something that a lot of people have been waiting for us to do.
Yes.
And that's the Return to Oz. So look forward to that one. But in turn, remember, the sequel is king.